You're listening to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Richard's style is very unique, where he shares the message of the gospel unlike anyone else. It's real, refreshing, focused, and fun. Whether you find yourself in a good place, maybe in a difficult place, or possibly even in a very lonely place, let me encourage you that you've come to the right place. Now, if you're not able to stick around with us for all of today's talk, you can always listen to, download, and even share this entire message with a friend right from our website, richardellistalks.com. So, with today's talk, here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is Western Union. Let me read you a story I found. This guy's wife asked, "Honey, if I died, would you remarry?" He replies, "Well, after a considerable period of grieving, well, we all need companionship. I guess I would." She says, "If I died and you remarried, would she live in this house?" He replies, "We've spent a lot of time and money getting this house just the way we want it. I'm not going to get rid of my house. I guess she would." So she asks, "If I died and you remarried and she lived in this house, would she sleep in our bed?" And he says, "Well, that bed is brand new. We just paid $2,000 for it. It's going to last a long time. I guess she would." So she asked, "If I died and you remarried and she lived in this house and slept in our bed, would she use my golf clubs?" And he says, "Oh no, she's left-handed." Now, you laugh a little and sigh a lot because that's the saddest state of the Western Union in this country. Half the marriages in this part of the world end in divorce. And people say, "Oh, well, that's just non-Christians." Let me tell you something. The statistics are the same for Christians and non-Christians. Christians screw up just as fast and go headlong into marriage. Used to be arranged marriages, beginning with Adam and Eve. They've been the norm for much of history and remain the norm in many parts of the world. You think, well, that's a disaster. You know what? They probably have better statistics than we do picking somebody just out of some basic animal attraction. In the Western Union, it's different. It's first sexual, usually, physical, sexual, then emotional, mental. Then there's marriage, if they're even going to bother with that. And now that's even gone out the window. Hollywood's made that the new thing. You know, whatever Hollywood does must be biblical and legal. You do the marriage, and then you do the spiritual. Then you start asking questions like, who are you? What do you believe? And what I try to do when I sit down with couples before they get married, head that direction, I say, wait a minute. You guys physically are attracted to each other. Great. You've had some great long conversations. You're in love, all that. What does she believe? What does he believe? What's going on here in the most important category of your lives? And you know what? They look at me, look at each other and go, I don't know. But at some point after the wedding, into the marriage, that's going to become an issue. And if it's not, you're in trouble anyway. Because you got no foundation. You got no rock to build this home and this life on together. God's way is that you find out who the person is spiritually. You say, well, I don't even know who I am spiritually. Well, maybe you ought to stop and think about that. What's going on with a person spiritually? Then you move to the mental, emotional, then marriage, and then you consummate the thing. You say, well, nobody's doing that anymore. And you know what? How's that working out for the planet? You'll say, well, that's just not the way things are done anymore. Well, why don't you just try to defy all of that and stop and say, you know what? Maybe God's way works. You say, well, I'm not buying any car. I can't test drive. Average cost of a wedding in America right now is $20,000. And I think the number I heard was that people spend maybe $50 on premarital counseling to see if the marriage is going to work. We have turned this thing of a wedding into something that has so much pressure, so much money. People go into debt and then their marriage is wrecked trying to pay for this big wedding to wow a bunch of people who would have been fine with a quick ceremony. And God bless you. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, a guy named Paul, who was Saul, basically a Shiite Jewish kind of guy that was just terrorizing all of Christianity and Christendom, and finally had an encounter with Jesus on a road to Damascus, becomes a Christian, his whole life's turned around, his name was Saul, even changed his name to Paul, and he is a different man, he is a different human being. And now he is being used of God to change the planet and wrote half of the New Testament. And he writes to this screwed up church in Corinth. And by the way, I've said this before, you wouldn't even have the New Testament if it wasn't for screwed up Christians. because there are problems. Somebody's sleeping with their mother, and they're stealing, and they're lying, and they're being mean to each other, and just devouring each other with their words. I mean, it's just a mess, and it's the same way today. So we read the Bible and say, okay, God, how do we change this? Our family, our church, our businesses, our lives, and it's all in the book, believe it or not. So he writes to this church at Corinth, and Corinth was one of the most pagan places on the planet. You worship the goddess in that town by hiring a prostitute at the local temple and worship. You know, it's like having prostitution at church. I mean, it's just, come in, well, I came to worship, you know, and you look like something I could worship. So here's your money, and I'll give a little donation to the temple, and we're on our way. It was a mess, and they grew up in this. So someone has written to Paul about a question, and it's about marriage, it's about sex, it's about whether you should marry or not. And he jumps in and answering this question in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 1 and following. He says, now concerning the things of which you wrote to me, you asked about it, I'm going to tell you. It is good for a man not to touch a woman. And you say, well, that's pretty no-brainer, unless the woman wants to be touched. And once they get married, they're, you know, using this verse all the time. You know what it says here? It's good for you not to touch me. Did you read that? Now, as you'll see in a minute, this doesn't apply to married people. He's saying if you're not married, the safest thing in the world is just don't touch each other. I've got a buddy in mind right now. I mean, he used to date hookers. He'd go to strip clubs. He'd just say, what are you going to make tonight? I'll give you $1,500. Come home with me and just take her for the evening. It was a game to him. And when he lived that kind of life, then he became a Christian. And in that process, trying to do the right thing, when he started dating the woman he married, he couldn't even hold hands with her, because that would trigger something, lead to something else. You say, well, that's whacked. You know what? He was wise enough to say, I'm not crossing these lines. It's better for me not to even touch her, because I know where this ends up, and I don't want to screw this relationship up. So Paul says, okay, you want an answer right up front? It's better not to touch a woman. Some translations say it's better not to marry. And the word here, though, for touch is to fasten oneself to, adhere to, cling to, of carnal intercourse with a woman, or cohabitation. So cohabitation, that's living with somebody. Now, I'm telling you, you came to church. If you don't like what you know, you can't be mad. I'm just reading out of the Bible, okay? If you're living with somebody and you're not a Christian, I could care less. I think it'll screw your life up. If you're a Christian, you're both Christians and you're living together and you're not married, you're screwing your life up, okay? If anybody wants to leave now, we can just wait till they leave, because this isn't a very popular thing to say. You know what? I'm not running for office. My job is to tell you what the truth is and then let you deal with that. Nevertheless, he says, I'm telling you the safest way, better for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife and let each woman have her own husband. Now, I don't want to go off too far on this, but there's no way you read this stuff without seeing two words. Wife, husband. Not husband, husband, wife, wife. It's wife, husband. Okay? This isn't popular either. Nobody wants to get up in the church and say you shouldn't be living together if you're not married. You know what? You can't find gay marriages in the Bible. I have gay friends. I think they're nice. I love them. But you know what? God did not intend for a man to marry a man or a woman marry a woman. Anybody left yet? We're still here. All right, verse 3. We made it that. We're only in verse 3. It's going to take a while. Let the husband. Now, this is where men love these verses. And women ought to love them too. But look where he goes immediately. Husband and wife. Let the husband render to his wife the affection due her. He starts with the husband and says, give her the affection that belongs to her. This isn't just about sex. It's about affection. That is more than sex. And likewise, also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Now, this is scriptural basis for married couples to have intimacy in their relationship consistently. And if you're playing games with intimacy, with sex in your marriage, you're not going to make it probably. If you're using it as a manipulative tool, trying to get what you want, whether it's a man or a woman, it's a game, somebody's going to lose that game. And here he says in verse 5, do not deprive one another, in other words, of this intimacy, do not deprive one another except with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer and come together again so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. The only time a couple says, as long as both are healthy and functioning, you look at each other and say, look, we're going to take a break because we got something we're going to pray and fast about, and we're going to shut everything down but praying and fasting, but what? As soon as this period of time is over, we're hooking up, so to speak. We're getting back together. Now, ask yourself this question. You're married. Is that how you're living? I talk to husbands. They say, you know what? We haven't had sex in 8 years, 10 years. You know what? That's whacked. That's insanity. You're asking for a nightmare. And you said, well, my husband went off and had an affair. You may have driven him to that almost. You're supposed to be taking care of him. And vice versa, a woman going out and a man saying, you know what, I'm not interested. You better figure out a way to get interested. Pray to God and take care of that woman. She's your wife. Verse 6, but I say this as a concession, not as a commandment. For I wish that all men were even as I myself, but each one has his own gift from God, one in this manner and another in that. Let me tell you something. I believe if you can stay single, you got a gift. I don't have that gift. I've said before, I don't want that gift. I don't care how you wrap it. I'm not interested in that gift. Paul somehow had that gift. Now, let me tell you something else. This sounds like it's just going to be about marriage, but I'm going to tell you what single people get the worst rap on the planet, because we have turned marriage into this idol, this wedding thing. You got to push for it. If you get a certain age, people all the time, have you met anybody? Your grandmother, your mom, everybody. Are you dating anybody? Like, if you're not, you're going to be assigned to some asylum someplace for single people. The Bible holds singleness, being unmarried, right in the same category as being married. And Paul says, you know what? If you're asking me, I'd say you're better off single. And he gives some reasons in a minute. So don't be pushing people who aren't married to get married. You know what? God may not want them married. And the reasons he'll give in a minute are fine. They're great reasons. And there is no guarantee anywhere in Scripture that everybody is going to get married. And there are people who are married that don't want to be married. And there are a lot of half of people who do get married, don't stay married. So this is hard stuff. Don't be rushing into it to satisfy your mom, your dad, your grandmother, or whoever it is. Be still and ask God what he wants you to do. And basically what this passage says is one of the main reasons for getting married, if you don't have any self-control. And instead of sleeping with everything that moves, pick a partner, stick with that person till death do you part. And that's where you take care of that. Verse 8, but I say to the unmarried and to the widows, it is good for them if they remain even as I am, but if they cannot exercise self-control, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. Now, the problem in this country, and I think around the world, is that no one is burning with passion. They're not getting married or burning with passion. They're just saying, who needs marriage? I'll just take care of business. We got retired people, 70, 80-year-olds who have arrangements in nursing homes or wherever it is, and say, you know what? I don't want to mix my family with yours. I don't want a prenuptial. I don't want to, you know, let's just hook up every once in a while, take care of business, and then we can just be friends and lovers, and that all sounds romantic. It's messed up. What kind of role model does that leave to you as moms and dads, to grandkids, to anybody? And if you are living with someone, if you are sleeping with, you know, with anybody you're not married to, and your kids go off and do the same thing, you don't have a leg to stand on. Get all upset and be careful, and you shouldn't be doing that. You can't say anything, and that's why nobody does say anything. Back up and say, God, am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Stop the madness and then take another step forward and say, okay, now to my kids, you know what? I've messed it up. This is not the best way to do this. Here's what God intended, and this is how I'm going to try to live. Robert Frost said, love is an irresistible desire to be irresistibly desired. So somewhere in the midst of all this, maybe being single, there's still something that stirs and people get married. Francis Bacon said, a bachelor's life is a fine breakfast, a flat lunch, and a miserable dinner. And that'd be about my life without my wife. Ambrose Bierce says this, the noun miss, M-I-S-S, the title which we brand unmarried women to indicate that they are in the market. Miss, Mrs., and Mr. are the three most distinctively disagreeable words in the language in sound and sense. Two are corruptions of mistress, the other of master. In the general abolition of social titles in this our country, they miraculously escape to plague us. If we must have them, let us be consistent and give one to the unmarried man. I venture to suggest mush, abbreviated to M-H. So we're going to have a miss and a mush to keep it consistent, she says. Look at verse 10 of 1 Corinthians 7. Now to the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord. A wife is not to depart from her husband, but even if she does depart, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband, and a husband is not to divorce his wife. You know what? I get to reading this stuff, and I'm just being real honest. I read through this and say, okay, God, this is where we're going, right? Yeah. And I get to these verses and I say, would you be okay if we like jump from 9 to 12 just to save time? Because there's a lot of people messed up their lives and divorced and they really don't want to hear this. And you kind of have these thoughts and you say, no, just read what I wrote and let them deal with it. Verse 12, but to the rest, I, not the Lord, say, if any brother has a wife who does not believe and she is willing to live with him, let him not divorce her. Okay, now this may be tremendously helpful because what happens, I know of a guy I'm thinking right now, he married a woman, neither one of them were Christians, nothing about God, just living their lives. And out of nowhere, he discovers that he can have a personal relationship with God through Jesus Christ, becomes a Christian personally. It's all really real to him. She wants nothing to do with it. And he's been hanging in there for almost a decade now. She hates him. She would get rid of him, but chooses to stay because of these kids. And they are tolerating each other. This is scripture written specifically to this guy. If any brother has a wife who does not believe and she's willing to live with him, let him not divorce her. And a woman who has a husband who does not believe, if he is willing to live with her, let her not divorce him. Stay together. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Otherwise, your children will be unclean, but now they are holy. But if the unbeliever departs, now here's your deal. If you're a Christian woman married to a non-Christian man, and he says, you know what? I'm out of here. I'm dumping you. I'm divorcing you. I'm gone. Then you are free to divorce. If the unbeliever departs, let him depart. A brother or a sister is not under bondage in such cases. But God has called us to peace. How do you know, O husband, whether you will save your wife? So you stay together if they're willing to stay together. If they decide they got to go, you let them go. But do everything you can because you're sticking with them. Maybe the thing that helps them see the unconditional you love in spite of their rejection of you and God, it may be the very thing that draws them into a relationship. Now, I'm not skipping anything for any reason, just it is for the sake of time. He does some conversation here in 17 to 24 about circumcision, whether you're a slave or free. Let's pick up in verse 25. Now concerning virgins, people not married, but really the word is virgins. I have no commandment from the Lord, yet I give judgment as one whom the Lord in his mercy has made trustworthy. I suppose, therefore, that it is good because of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? And I'm really not crazy about these words, but you know, some guys say, yeah, I'm bound to a wife. All right. Been strapped to her for 20 years, or, you know, whatever you're thinking. Are you bound to a wife? In other words, committed to a wife. Do not seek to be loosed. Are you loosed from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But even if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Nevertheless, we'll have trouble in the flesh, but I would spare you. But this I say, brethren, the time is short, so that from now on, even those who have wives should be as those who had none, those who weep as those who did not weep, those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice, those who buy as though they did not possess, and those who use this world as not misusing it, for the form of this world is passing away. In other words, he's saying life is short, the times are tough, don't complicate your life with getting into a marriage situation if you don't have to or don't want to or don't need to. Focus on God, not this world, because it's passing away. Verse 32, but I want you to be without care. He who is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. Now this is what is so powerful about being single. And if you are single, don't sit on your butt for the next 5, 10, 15 years going, oh, my life will kick in when I get married. Say, God, if you want me married, great. But until then, I'm going to find a way to serve you and do the things, if I ever do marry, that I won't be able to do then. When you're single, you can get on a plane and go to where the tsunami problems hit, just go and do it. You don't have a wife or kids, nothing wrong with those, but you have to focus on a family. And when you're single, you focus on the Lord. You just go wherever he wants you to go, whenever he wants you to go. And that's what he says here. He who is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord, how you may please the Lord. And the assumption here is that that's the truth. If you're not married, are you really concerned about the things of the Lord? Or are you just taking care of yourself? But he who is married cares about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. Now, guys, Paul is not in any way bashing marriage. You go, the same guy wrote over in Ephesians 5, 22 and following in there about wives submitting your husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. This guy says here, if you can stay single, stay single. But when he says you get married, go for it. And live in such a way that you lay your very life down as a husband for your wife. And so he's commenting on both sides of this thing. Verse 34, there is a difference between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman cares about the things of the Lord that she may be holy both in body and in spirit. Now, we give nuns a hard time, for instance. I'm not Catholic and, you know, it's about Catholicism. But you know what? That's a good picture of a woman who says, I'm going to commit my life completely to the Lord. I mean, you don't have to wear a habit to be one. I mean, you can just be a woman and be single and say, God, I'm going to spend my life and expend my life doing whatever you want me to do and focusing on you and ministry. And am I missing out on something? Maybe, but you know what? Maybe not. If you don't want to complicate things, he flat out says here, the unmarried woman cares about the things of the Lord that she may be holy both in body and in spirit. But she who is married cares about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. Now you say, well, I'm not worried about pleasing my husband. What does that mean? That may be part of your problem. If you are married, part of the challenge is you're supposed to be spending time trying to figure out how you're going to please your wife, as he said a few verses before, and for the woman's side, how you're going to please your husband. If you are going to get married, be married and do it by the book. And you'd be amazed how much longer you'd last. Verse 35, and this I say for your own profit, not that I may put a leash on you, but for what is proper, and that you may serve the Lord without distraction. So clearly, I don't think he's saying one is better than the other, but especially to people who are single, don't get under this pressure. Realize God holds that in high esteem. And if that's what he's called you to do, I've got friends, we got people here who didn't marry for till in their 40s, or people get married in their 50s for the first time, and some girl will go out with a guy like that and say, what are you, gay or something? You know, like being single that long makes him some kind of weirdo. Maybe God didn't want him married and divorced and married and divorced two or three times. He was waiting for you. Verse 36, but if any man thinks he is behaving improperly towards his virgin, if she is past the flower of youth, and thus it must be, let him do what he wishes. He does not sin, let them marry. Nevertheless, he who stands steadfast in his heart, having no necessity, but has power over his own will, and has so determined in his heart that he will keep his virgin, does well. In other words, if you've got some woman, your friends, you say, you know what, should we marry, not marry? I'm okay, not married, let's be friends. Then keep it friends. Honestly, what is marriage? It is a great friendship where you have sex every once in a while. It is not a great sexual relationship where you maybe have a conversation. A bunch of writers that I saw researching this talked about marriage as being a long conversation. So ask yourself the question, could I have a long, extended conversation with this person till one of us dies, and would I be okay with that? But am I so attracted to them that I can't just be their friend? I'm going to have to marry them so that we can be together beyond just the friendship where there's some intimacy. So then, he who gives her in marriage does well, but he who does not give her in marriage does better. So if there's a way to keep it single, he says do that.
Richard will be back in a moment to wrap up today's talk. But first, I want to share a couple of thoughts with you. Let's be honest. Real life isn't about living some highlight reel for others to see. Most people have deep hurts, questions, and struggles. Well, we get it, and we want to help you in any way we can. So let's keep this conversation going. You can give us a call anytime at 855-6-RICHARD or connect with us at our website, richardellistalks.com. You can even put in your prayer request right there on the prayer wall. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD or online at richardellistalks.com. And now let's get back to Richard with a final word on today's show.
Find out, if you decide to marry and enter into this Western union, who is this person? Who are you, first of all? And if you as women don't have enough sense to ask these questions, you get exactly what you deserve. You say, well, he's got a little money and he loves me and I'm getting older and my clock's about to stop. You know, I got to jump in this game or I'm going to get left behind. So who did you just hook your wagon up to and say, roll the dice and pray for lucky seven and see if it all works out? You know what? It's not going to work out probably that way. But at least you got yourself off the market and then you can be a divorcee and jump back in the game and just play the world's way. Stop. And if you're a guy, think about what you're doing. You say, but everybody else is doing it, and everybody else is getting married and divorced, and their lives are screwed up. If that's what you want, don't complain to God. Oh, God, why did you let this happen to me? He watched you do it. You made the choice. I sit down with couples. I don't care how much you love each other. If one of them says they're a Christian, the nightmare of the process is finding out if the other one's a Christian. Because if both aren't, my conscience, my conviction is I cannot marry two people who are not both Christians. That would be a disaster. because one starts pulling in one direction, the other says, you know what? I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to hear about that. You go to your church, you take the kids, leave me alone. I don't know what you're talking about. I think you're nuts. Take care of me, be with me mentally, emotionally, physically. I don't care about your spiritual stuff. Wherever you are in the process, whether you're thinking about getting married, whether you're a Christian, you're married to a non-Christian, whether you're both Christians, you're in trouble, you got to stop the madness at some point and say, Father, what are we doing? What do you want us to do? Am I okay with you? Are we okay with you? Is there some way to fix this? And don't bail just because things get rough. Ask God what His will, what His plan is, and you'd be amazed what He can do and the difference that it makes.
Thanks for listening today to Richard Ellis Talks. We're confident that the program blessed you, and we want to hear about it. One way is to give us a call and let us know. The number is 855-6-RICHARD. Another way is to drop us an email. Jump on over to our website, richardellistalks.com, and click on the Connect tab at the top. We'd love to hear from you. And while you're there at the website, there's a ton of great stuff there just for you. Things like all of the talks from Richard, a prayer wall where you can leave your prayer request, and a whole lot more. Check it out, richardellistalks.com. Finally, we love doing this program for you, but we're so grateful when you hop on board to help us with the cost. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD, or you can contribute through the website. It's easy and much appreciated. 855-6-RICHARD or richardellistalks.com. Until next time, God bless you, and thanks for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.